like what we have here. Welcome back. To my left, I have the other guy that has ruined fly fishing for the world. Howard and I were just talking about how a certain person told him that he had ruined fly fishing, I assume, in the UK, maybe the world. And I said, well, that's strange, because I was told the same thing here when streamers started. That I took it as a compliment. I mean, to ruin the whole world, a lot of people tried to think that two of us did it. It's pretty simple, pretty easy.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know, this is Howard Crosston. He is a world fly fishing champion, Fulling Mill signature tire, and the global brand and product manager at Hardy. Anything I missed in there?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
About it. Ruined fly fishing. Missed that bit.
There we go.
What is it?
Ruined fly fishing.
Oh, ruined, yeah.
Ruined fly fishing.
We might need a translator at some point.
Today's show is brought to you by slidein.com. Go buy something. There's a lot of stuff that you might like, including Euronips, which I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit about today.
Absolutely.
Including Hardy Rods and Reels.
And Hardy Rods and Reels, we've got a bunch more of those now.
Just a handful.
I like the ones that make noise, You know, kind of announcing that you're getting fish. It's fun.
I got a huge collection of antique Hardys.
Okay.
Which is a little bit frightening because I think some of them I had as a kid and they were new. But a friend of mine has been collecting forever. Well, he was. He died last year, but he gave me a ton of them. He was a big-time collector.
Awesome.
So it's really cool.
Yeah, I've still got my first one. My first proper fly rod was a Hardy.
Yeah.
Obviously before I worked there, but yeah.
I spent a summer picking cherries and asparagus and it was farm community in northern Michigan, but took me all summer to get up and up. I bought my first one, LHR. I can't remember which one it was the first, because I got two back-to-back. I don't know where I got the money. Probably robbed somebody. I don't know. But I had two, and I got a perfect, and I thought I was pretty much Joe Brooks.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought I was somebody, man.
Yeah.
I got the one for Christmas. That's what it was. I got one in the fall, and my dad got me one for Christmas. And all I can remember is I got it, and I left the room. I walked out of the room and went to my bedroom. It's like I got a porn magazine or something. I go to my bedroom, and I'm just sitting turning it. And turning it and turning it. My dad finally goes, "Would you stop turning that damn reel?" There's no line on it. It's pretty tinny, right? I just sat there. I put it on the butt section of my, and I would sit and look at it and reel it some more. Turn that damn reel.
Oh, that's it. Super cool. I remember getting, we used to have all these casting competitions back home, and I really wanted some Hardy stuff. And it was at the big game fairs that we used to have in the UK. And you used to get like a $20 voucher, a £20 voucher every time you entered or got a prize. And I went for like 3 days in a row and kept like winning these £20 pound vouchers. And then I went to the Hardy stand and actually bought my first Hardy fly rod off there.
Wow.
But when they'd done the sponsorship, they expected like 30 people to win them. And they were like from multiple companies.
Mm-hmm.
So when I turned up with like, £300 worth of vouchers, they had to pay, you know, to honour the vouchers where they expected, they'd get like, you know, maybe one or two people would come and spend a £20 voucher, not turn up with like...
Not one.
All of it, just to take a fly rod off the stand, which was, I don't think they were overly happy.
What's £300 in US?
Oh, back then, oh God, I don't know. Less than that.
Once upon a time, I took international finance, but that was a long time ago.
So I didn't take too much notice. Well, they've had it out of me since. I've been there for 24 years now, so.
Wow.
They've had the dollar back, so.
You've been them 24 years?
Yeah.
With Hardy?
Wow, that's cool. Yeah. Frightening. Seems like yesterday.
So,
yeah, it's funny.
Howard, I did a little stalking of you on Instagram, and I saw a clip that I believe it was you and Fulling Mill that put out, where you said that sometimes fishing one fly is more effective than fishing two.
Yeah.
And I believe you were talking about contact nymphing, euro nymphing. What do you like to refer to it as?
You know, that's a big rabbit hole. Euro nymphing doesn't really exist. It's not a not a thing. That's
kind of a generalization.
That's just
right?
a generalization. Yeah. Contact's a good word.
Okay.
You know, tight line's a good word. You know, it's all the same stuff, really. You know, but yeah, one fly sometimes is a big deal.
So why do you think one fly can be more effective than two?
I think for me, for the kind of fishing we do sometimes, I do a lot of competition fishing, right? But it just gives you a cleaner drift. You know, you got one fly in one current line, behaves better, you have better contact to it, you're able to manipulate it better as well. And it seems to be just like a step. You know, you get a lot of guys fishing two flies and they stick them both in the river and one goes in one current seam, one goes in the other. They start getting a bit of differential drift. It all goes a bit weird. Sometimes the fish want that, you know, it's not.
Right.
You know, drag's not always a bad thing in some ways because it's just movement at the end of the
day. It's amazing to me how often I ask people about two flies. I mean, even way back when, you know, when wading a nymph started in the U.S. when it just wasn't around, right? And definitely not split shotting and or any sort. But I would ask people why they're fishing two flies. I bet I could do it if the next guy that walks in and ask them, and they'll be like, it's because what? Because you wear a tie with a suit, I don't know. And it, no idea. I mean, at least when I started, we did it, because I started out in the 70s where you were following the emergence. And so you would position a fly, and we didn't use lead, but pretty shortly, we were starting to in there in a little bit, but it's kind of like that, but you had a weighted, not pre-bead heads and all that, but you had a weighted fly, and then you'd have a emergent fly, and you'd fish two zones, and you're, you know, basically contacting, and then we started with split shot, and you would see people, they just put it be lead fly, and you try to explain to them about, well, you need your lightest fly down here. Well, what do you mean? Well, you're trying to get this one like it's going up. Why? Oh, and you want to say, one fly would be really good for you, you know? And it's just, I did it last weekend. I was down here, and the guys were fishing two flies. And I said, well, let me see, grab your rod real quick. Let me see how you're set up. Because they said, they're just not catching anything on this fly. And it was too close. Everything was, I said, well, you're just fishing one fly, really, because you had your anchor down. They had their heavier fly down, and the other one's real close. And I said, you're just getting the first, it's the fly that gets them first. I mean, you're not. And I said, you know, and that's what I said, you know why you're fishing two, right? And they go, no, really not. And these weren't the newbies. These guys are, so we sat down, and I just drew out. Like I like to drop shot, like put my drop on the bottom so I can establish that lower fly is always where I want it, yeah. Right? And the upper one, I explained to them why it would be there is, you know, for about 2 hours, it's not relative because they're not up on those upper bugs. This is, yeah. It's there. You're just fishing two flies so you can make me more money because you're going to snag the shit out of stuff. I never discourage it from anybody. Yeah, you should try a triple. It's incredible. And they're like, so why do we have that in there? I says, well, you're supposed to understand that things move up.
Yeah.
And you'll figure it out. I says, and I try to explain to him, I say, you know, I like to lift at the end. And he says, if I get fish that are eating on the, as it's coming up, it should tell you something. And then they look at you. where's the answer here?
What's it telling me?
Yeah. You ever notice how you quit getting fish on that bottom fly, all of a sudden they're eating the other one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Up in the water.
Why? Yeah, it's pretty, we're shooting live with the shop and people, so you're going to hear people out there. Don't worry about it. We're not being attacked. But yeah, it's pretty amazing to me that Brian O'Keefe and I were going to do a show about pre-lead. I mean, back when one fly, before two, you know, and yeah, we fished two a lot because, I don't know, I grew up, my dad was a guide in 1940, and we did a brace wet fly. We never fished dries. We always fished wet flies. Yeah. On Hardy, on a 9-foot Hardy 6-weight, and my dad had a, you know, they had all these gentlemen ranchers kind of. They had bird hunting places up on the Pyramid Marquette and the Pine, And a lot of them were very affluent people. And one guy gave my dad a tip, and it was an Atlantic salmon rod. And it was a light Atlantic salmon rod, but you know, I would fancy it maybe a 8-weight. I don't know. But still, I'm the only fisherman. There's three of us. One of them's, I don't know what Finn does. And he was a chiropractor his whole life. He just wasn't really into the outdoors. And my brother, big time shooter, I mean, unbelievable gun collector since he was 16. And when, for some reason, my dad gives my brother Finn, the one that doesn't fish, one gun, which was a really cool flintlock that he built for my mom, and a fly rod. And it was wood, so he gave it to the neighbor kid to fish bluegills. And it was that hardy Atlantic salmon rod. I go, you did what? You moron. But that was the rod that I got to learn on.
Okay.
Because he never fished it. And he didn't really care if I broke that one. But I never... We weren't allowed to just go fish, fly. We could go fish anything you want. You couldn't go fly fish. You had to go with him because he wasn't going to give you his stuff. And so we just wet fly swung everything. But even then, we would do a point fly, heavier, like giant. I mean, we'd always run in a weighted cow dung point fly and then a par machine or something really bright and queen of the waters or always done it. And we would swing everything.
So when you swung... You swing with the rod tip up or the rod tip down?
Then? I have no idea. I'm generally kind of right between, to tell you the truth. I kind of almost point just with a little, just a little up.
Just a little bit up.
Just up. And now I slip strike because I always have a loop. But I didn't do it. We graduated from that into upstream wets. And so now, it's a, you know, when you're young, we would just swing them. And then as we got older, we would go kind of dry, almost up and across dry, and you have to contact. And now you're really having to...
You've got to work.
And, and it, you know, you're over contact, you're over, everything's going wrong, but you got fish on it.
Yeah.
I mean, you got fish even as you're moving them, but when you really got, and there's a lot more, and that's where you learn the visual aspect of it. And that was really cool. But again, our flies were like that long.
Oh, big.
A lot of times.
Wow. Yeah,
really big.
So what's happened back home in the UK? Because, you know, the whole urine infant thing's like blown up everywhere.
Yeah, same here.
And it's just in my opinion, like the river anglers now, they don't really learn any of the traditional skills that we had prior to beadheads.
Yeah.
So like spider wet fly fishing, like Oliver Edwards was a great friend of mine.
Yeah.
Fishing in many years and, you know, those traditional North Country spider wet flies are a skill in the self.
Yeah.
You know, and I typically don't see anybody doing it anymore. And it's still absolutely lethal. I mean, it's really good here as well.
I'm not sure I've ever seen anybody here do it. Well, I mean, I told you we throw the bigger wets. That was when we were young. But then as we got older, my dad particularly, I've done videos about how I got started when I was 5 tying for bluegill flies. But as I progressed, and he would tell me every time, that's the greatest, that is way better than Skip. Skip kind of taught me how to fish cricks and stuff, worms. He was really good outdoorsman. But he didn't tie flies. I didn't put that together. So he never lied to me. He just told me, yeah, that's better than Skip. Yeah, not really. I got hit a lot as a kid in the head. And so, but we graduated into... He had two flies in particular. That one was a bluegill fly. It was a rubber band body before latex and all that, orange. A little bit of fox squirrel and then two turns of brown hackle. And it was basically just a skill set, you know, I could tie all day doing that. And then, but we went into Queen of the Waters and the Henryville Special and some kind of basic, like, hairs airy wets. But then... He used to do the, I don't know what I would liken it to. It's a spider, but it had two turns of hackle, but it had a tail. And it was just not much to it, thread body.
Yeah.
And not much to it, but it had a tail like you almost were going to dry fly fish it. But dry fly fishing was really in its infancy in the 60s when I was a child. There weren't a lot of, they were there, obviously, but you still, well, I never saw anybody fishing flies, ever. I was in my teens before I saw a fly fisherman.
Wow.
I mean, where I would actually go to the river, I mean, everybody fished bait and lures and stuff, but never saw a fly guy. But he would throw those up and across, and again, usually tandem. And the upper one was in the film, and he would dead drift it, basically, and just keep, I had a hard time not, I mean, I just couldn't keep up, right? And, but it was different.
It's a cool method. I mean, it's a lost skill now, wet fly fishing. I think back home, there's less and less people do it. There's still a few guys who really, you know, but particularly the upstream and upstream across methods, which are harder.
Yeah.
You know, but you do, when you do see guys swinging, they nearly always have the rod tip at the water and everything's dead straight. And
yeah, they
get a lot of that.
That's why I slip straight. Even when, I would say, I don't know, I kind of carry, I don't know, I kind of carry about here, but I don't do as much swing stuff as I do. I do up and across a lot.
Yeah.
So are you a proponent of, sorry, go ahead.
He wants the rod up a little
bit. You're
a proponent of the rod.
Yeah, I like the rod open.
Is it shock absorption?
A little bit of an upstream mend and keep a lot of, it's quite short range. We don't throw long, not like we're swinging for steelhead or anything. It's like quite short range and rod tip up, get the line above it and get like some controlled drift, you know, where you're sort of dropping through a little bit with the rod tip as it's coming over. You never really get it too low. And it sort of reduces your sort of.
And I thought when you asked me, I thought you said swinging, but I still keep my rod up when I swing too. Not like at a steelhead thing, you know, this, but up about like, I don't know, 40 degrees maybe.
Yeah.
So the same thing. But when I do upstream and across, which I've never, here, it's incredibly deadly. Like this afternoon, when those fish get on the betas.
Yeah.
It's stupid. You can, but this is such a nymphy river that I just hardly ever.
It's the best, one of the best nymphy rivers I've ever fished in the world.
It's really hard to say, but 2 o'clock when those betas are in the film, that's when you can do the double wet up and across. But it's really, this river, there's only a handful of pools that are conducive to someone like learning that, because they're tall and ass, you know, and a lot of here. And it amazes me how often we've filmed once across the river, and there was this guy on the point before we had when the river blew out. It took that point away. It didn't do anything most all the river except right on where my boat launch is. And it took that corner and just cut it out. And then it made this huge island downstream. I mean, huge. I mean, probably 60 yards long.
Wow.
And it used to be the deepest hole in the upper river. It's gone. It's that island we wade across to at night. And now it's it's 60 yards of pure boulders, right? I don't know. It's just amazing that's where it locked up, but made one of the best runs you've ever seen in your life. Oh my God, is that thing money? But what was I getting at with the betas thing? Or that guy over there, when he was on the point, and he was, we see that with everything, but he was trying to do an up and across thing, and he would go like, he would bundle his line up, pick it up, and he'd throw it up, and his rod would pull that fast. And I'm like, hey, too fast. And he's like, there'd be his rod down here. But he would just stand there and watch upstream. He'd climb below him. He'd see his rod actually bend and go like this, and he'd be watching up here doing that. Freaking water's standing waves that big. I'm thinking, be cool if you get one, but you're never going to know
it. No chance.
I think if you think it back in time, like I go back to the, really not until the late 60s did I really start to do any type of fly fishing. And that was pretty marginal, really, because I'm 10, 12 years old. And but when I'm 16, that's as Swish and Richards is coming around, right? And and I was lucky to go. I've never seen anybody try to get in that door. Might be
a customer?
I don't know. Might have been Scotty. But anyway, when I was in my teens, I was fortunate that Doug and Carl were doing all that stuff over on the Asable, not far from it. And I got to go to a couple of those things. But Carl used to come and do fly tying at Eastern Elementary School. It's funny because I always think about it. Everybody smoked a pipe, right? And you're in the elementary cafeteria. I mean, now they'd have to detox the building or something. All the kids are going to die. You know, oh my God, there's pipe. But to see the transition between glorified wet, dry, you know, upstream stuff, and then to see that how techie it developed so quickly, right? I mean, to me, that's what saved our business, is it?
Yeah.
It became this so exacting science. You know, you go from an Adams to a no-hackle, basically. And where I grew up, there's about five patterns, period. And that was it. You know, you didn't have all the... And then that happened, and everything changed.
Yeah.
Everything was techie dry, you know, and super... And we basically lost all the other stuff. I mean, for my 15 years, other than steelhead and salmon, you didn't do anything but dry fly fish.
No.
Your whole, always guiding, it's all we did, you know.
I remember watching those selective trout videos on VHS.
Yeah.
Watched them all over and over and over again, those things were.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That was 3M did that, and it was... I did the same thing. I had them on a reel in my fly shops. They just never stopped.
No.
Well, Billy Pate came out with this tarpon thing. I never even heard of a tarpon. And I started watching that because it's so funny to watch Billy Pate. We got to go. I'm wide out in Poland, Billy. But I'm surprised to hear that in your neck of the woods, the things are going that way too, because I got one guy, Richie Strollis, and I were like, kindred spirits. We hate everything that's not what we like, right? And so we kind of commiserate with all the assholes that, you know, have a definition of an asshole. Anybody that's not in our boat.
I'm getting like that.
Yeah, it's not, but it's Richie had a thing. He goes, you know, not all fly fishermen want to talk to you on the river. He said, if you see the big bald headed guy, he doesn't either. That's Rich. But we kind of talk about the loss of for a while it was me because of streamers, and that was going to kill the whole world, and now it's Euro nymphing, and that's going to kill all the world. But you know what I've seen here in the last, and particularly last year, I saw people coming into the shop and saying they were dedicated, because I called them Euro trash once, and he said, he said, I'm a dedicated Euro trasher. They love to ban. I'm surprised there's not stickers yet, because that was that Euro trash thing. And they'll come in and they say, I confess, I'm one of them. I says, I do it too. I never said I did. I do it a lot. But I said, he goes, but I'm just bored of it.
Yeah.
He says, what is this dry flip? It was an epiphany moment for me to be like, this guy says, I really want to get into this dry fly thing.
Yeah.
Thing. Like, there's another way to fish than Euro and or contact, whatever you want to call it. But it was, no more than a half a dozen, more like four or five maybe, last it came in and they said that to me in some way around the barn to say, I'm tired of doing that. I'm tired of just doing that. And there's more to it. I says, it's really can be pretty infinite if you'll let it. And
exactly.
And it says, and the thing is, it's all fun. I mean, when, you know, you want to go try something? I personally think upstream wet fly is the most difficult way to fish in the world.
It is hard.
And especially if you're filming, if you're not watching those, you know, you get them in there on when they're bulging on the emergers, that's one thing. It's not that, it's kind of not so hard, but to go do that. And I think once you get past the whole, I got to catch every fish in the freaking ditch. One of my reps, my sage rep, Kurt, said to me when I was out, because I usually go 2 days Euro, straight up, full on, right? And it's like, it should be illegal here. It's so effective.
Yeah.
And he comes back and he's here waiting on me. He says, how'd you, I was gone an hour and 43 minutes. How'd you do? Really good. How good? Really good. How good? 63. And he says, And he says, "That's not bad." And he said, because Kurt's cockier than Rutten Bull, you know. He's just, and I, he says, and then, but they finished it with, because he kind of got into it a few years before that. And I, he says, "Are you tired of catching every fish in the river yet?" I said, "I do it a couple times a year because I, sometimes, anyhow, catching fish, this, they all count, right?
Oh, yeah.
This big, what, I don't give a shit. It's just like number. Just sit here. Shit, I think we could go, I guarantee I could take you up back and you can drop 20 fish in
I think
20 minutes. There's a lot of fish sitting up with their heads up out back. Afternoon.
You know, there comes a point with that when you're not learning anything.
Well, that's
you're
the thing.
You're just catching fish all the time.
That's that was what he was getting, he's alluding to. He says, you know, once you're good at it, even relatively good, you don't have to be Howard good, you just be proficient. And your catch rate is just so astronomical.
It does.
And what bothered me about it was the lack of knowledge that, I mean, I spent my whole life designing flies and following emergences and knowing what one swims like and what pupates like and what gas bubble does this. To I take two shiny bugs and they catch fish better than anything I ever tied. It was demoralizing as hell.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky, right? So when I learned how to fly fish, it was pretty much not really a big social media thing or YouTube really or anything like that. So I learned how to fly fish properly, really, for want of a better description, wet flies, dry flies, flies without beads on them, you know, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of people, I think, when they get into river fishing in particular, the first thing back home that I see is they go straight to the Euro stuff and they get stuck in it and they never go past it. And we've had the same issue with stillwater fishing. And that's what I got all the heat for, was because I did an indicator for stillwater fishing. And you get people who stillwater fish and all they can do is fish with an indicator, a bob or whatever you want to call it. And they never really advance onto anything else. And part of the reason I got so much grief was because I came up with an indicator that looked more like a float than a fly fishing indicator.
Well, I got him.
So I was, so basically I was the devil incarnate for that.
Yes.
But the only thing I would say is that either Euro on the river or indicator fishing in a lake is a great way for somebody to get into it and catch some fish.
So that's the question I was going to throw at you is, and kind of going back to my own experience, you know, I got into fishing, I nymphed, I threw dry flies, not very well at the beginning. Not saying I'm better now, but
I wouldn't.
I remember I Euro'd in for like a week and a half, and I caught a boatload of fish doing it. It taught me where fish are in rivers, right? Because you have so much feedback.
Yeah.
Wow. What would you recommend to a beginner angler in terms of all the disciplines? 10:02. I forgot your yogurt. My bad.
It's a rule around
here. Let's do fight again.
So what? What kind of path would you recommend for beginner angler to learn these disciplines? Like what order would you go in?
Well, the first thing is that is learn how to cast, because that makes everything way easier. If you can actually cast some fly line, it's a big help. And I still see loads back home. First thing they do is go and buy a fly rod and run to the river and pound it to death. And, you know, they don't go and get a lesson and just even learn the basics. And after that, really, you know, pick your poison. You know, if you want to, you've got to start somewhere, you know. And for me, it was, I started fishing dry flies. That was for me because it was visual and I could see them eating, so I knew they were there and I didn't always catch them, but, you know, I learned about drift and presentation and watercraft. And that really, for me personally anyway, set me off on, you know, on a track to, you know, probably doing it the right way, I would say, rather than just throwing two bead heads in the river on some thin line or tying a bobber on or whatever.
I was telling you about Oliver, who is, I've mentioned him many times in my stuff. He's one of my all-time designer heroes for sure, top two. But I remember when bead heads showed up in the U.S. in the first magazine article. And man, I was totally Oliver. I should bring that. I have it over there. He's got his duck butt mayfly on the cover of it. I subscribe to Fly Fishing Tying out of Europe. And he's gone on this rant about, he's old, grumpy old bastard now, and he doesn't give a shit what any of us think. And he says, And I'm like, oh my God, I had the same rant back in the 80s when the bead showed up. And I'm like, spend your whole life designing flies to make them look and swim a certain way, and here's this freaking shiny helmet on this goddamn thing. I'm like, I was really anti-bead for a long time. And just because, well, first of all, it didn't sink the fly that much. Like, that was the point. And then it would sink the fly upside. I would say, well, if it does work, the fly's going backwards, you dumbass. Its head's going down. Never does their head go down, ever, right? I'm like, what part of this, how are you going to run it in your system so that it flies ascending like it's supposed to? And I'm reading Oliver, and he's just like worse than I. He's like, he's got 25 extra years of pissed off, right?
Oh, yeah.
But here's this guy that's one of, like, I had a flush streamer. He came back to Michigan, did a seminar for Ray Schmidt back in Michigan. Ray was one of the first sage rep. He was the first sage rep. And had a great business back there forever, really good tire. But Oliver came and did this thing. It was pretty cool. That's when I got to meet him. And he had this sculpin, and it was just the bunny sculpin. It basically just stripped and it, little hair head. And I don't know if he gave it to me or if I tied it, I can't remember, but I took it on the Manistee, and I put it on the first time. We're eating lunch. I tied it up, and I said, oh, let's eat. Like, there's a really great spot right there, and we always eat in that same area. It's really nice, and see the river. It's beautiful. It's a big river, right? Bigger than the Madison. But I tied it on, just got it wet to see it, and it's sitting, the thing's swimming, right? And I'm like, so I just left it on the end of the rod. Like, me to Braden off the front of the boat. We went up, and we're, I don't know, 10, 15 yards away from the boat. And all of a sudden, I hear this banging on the boat. It's a metal boat. And I can hear this weird noise. I'm like, what the hell? And I look. This really nice fish, like a 19-inch Browns, ate this fly. And the rod's pulled up, and it's stuck in my stanchion. It's a metal stanchion. And the reel's pounding against the front of the stanchion. And the rod's going back and forth. And the fish is just up. And we got the fish. Wow. We landed the fish. It was crazy. And that's when I became a true Oliver Edwards convert. Yeah. And I started looking at everything he did. But I was just, it just kind of strange to me. I have this idea of, you know, being on the test or something with a ghillie that's telling me when I can cast it. And it's upstream only and proper to throw now. And then you're coming in here and telling us that it's exactly the same there as it is here.
Yeah.
And Charles, when he was here, you know, he was a little more proper. He had rules, and we talked lake a lot. He was really anti-bobber then. That was a long time ago. Johnny was here. I bet it was back in like 205, 208 maybe.
Yeah.
And he was really anti-bobber then too. And I agree completely. I watched the same thing. That can't deny how deadly it is.
No,
you just really can't, but it's...
You've got to learn the other stuff as well.
Yeah.
You've really got to.
It's like boobies. They've just caught on here.
Yeah.
They're just starting to catch on. I remember we filmed a show up on Mission one day a long time ago, and I pulled out a booby, and the guys didn't know what it was. And it, not that long ago, 20.
For any of our beginner watchers, that's a lake fly.
What, the boobies?
Yeah.
There's a booby damsel.
Yeah, if you didn't know that was pretty funny sounding.
Yeah, well, I suppose. Yeah. Well,
they just caught on here.
Yeah, boobies just caught on in the U.S. On,
yeah.
Well, I don't get those slid by me very often, but that one did. But that was, you know, I they're really new here. I mean, we've got a couple different slip bobbers up there. I still, on a daily basis, have to explain it. They really don't get it. Where I grew up, I never even heard of them. And we fished the lakes. I lived on Lake Michigan, so I fished them a lot. But that's for a different, that's for coastal fish, you know, steelhead and salmon. And we'd do those in the spring, migratory stuff moving. They'd run the big schools coming in. It's cool as shit. But in the lakes, we just stripped, you know, intermediate.
Yeah.
I mean, Cortland, clear camo. Before that, I don't remember what the line was. Before that one, that one's just changed my life. We call them slime lines.
Yeah, yeah. Slide and, lines. And, yeah, we call the same thing.
You could huck those. Yeah. When you first time you cast one of those things, like, whoa, I'm somebody. They would get up and go. But they, I never saw a bobber until I got out west.
No.
I never saw one.
It's pervasive at home now on the lakes. You know, we have a different lake fishery. We have, you know, we have big lakes that have got naturalized fish, but we have a lot of small lakes that have got stockers in them. And a lot of people never get past them small stocker lakes.
Yeah.
And that part of it has become a little bit, you know, you hang junk flies under an indicator. Mm-hmm. And it's great and it works. And I do it. And I do it in the winter all the time, mm-hmm. you know, but it's not.
I run bobbers all the time up here. I mean, there's times when, especially the first brood of when the midges first start coming. I mean, I have somewhere we've got a video where they're so thick that I've got another one where there's a shelf ice and they're coming off of it and they're coming up. They're hitting it. They're coming out here and you can hear them. It's just they're flying away.
Yeah.
But they're that freaking big.
Wow.
Right? And so. Yeah. To go out and strip is kind of, you can do it, but we had, when you have a good morning, a 2.5 hour morning up there, you can, if you're just an average one, can be a 50 fish with two guys.
Wow.
And they're all
big fish. Yeah.
And you do a stomach pump, it plugs. There's
solid.
Some of the larvae are that long. And wow. I mean, yeah. And their chrome and their bloods.
Yeah.
And there's, when you get a bunch of chromies going through that, you're just wasting time not doing it. But it goes on and it goes off.
Yeah.
And then you can hang that bobber for the next 6 hours and you're standing there with your thing in your hand because it ain't working.
No.
And you better have another game.
That's it.
Right?
It's all about having as many things as you can do.
Yeah.
That's it.
And that's what, you know, the whole fly fishing thing, to me, that's what I've said for decades. Why would you not want to know something else? Now, I give you the contact or whatever, tight lining, is likely the most successful all-day process there is. You can do it. You know,
yeah.
dry flies when they're up, and you can pound it and make it happen. But I get that. But I just would go, if I had to just streamer fish, I would quit.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't. Everybody says, oh, that's all you do. I say, oh, my God. It's not true. It is not true.
Throw one on the big hole the other day. Dry fly bite died.
I'm like,
how about a peanut envy?
Yeah, I did. We were fishing foam, which I find disgusting, too. But I finally had to switch off to a fly that I could sink. Foam has done as much to kill it. Anglers here because that's under what? Don't worry, it'll come back. It'll pop to the surface in a minute. Don't worry.
It's a bobber that's not a bobber.
Yeah.
What do you think of foam?
You know, we don't use it all that. We don't have like the big chubbies and all that kind of stuff back home. We don't really have those big, big bugs. We use it a little bit in some caddis patterns and stuff, but we don't use it in the same way you guys use it. You know, it's not really a thing
here.
For us.
It is.
Yeah.
It's everywhere and everything. And it's like, but we have a lot of the salmon or the stoneflies, a lot more of them. And we have very prolific, and it's very fast river. You get to the rivers that aren't, you get up on the Mo,
yeah.
You don't see the foam like you see here. I mean, this is just a very difficult river. And it's
you can
so
sink guide- foam in this river.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can
sink,
foam. You can saturate foam here, but it's.
Yeah, it's rough.
But it was not. I just couldn't do it all day.
No.
I got my ass kicked because they were on the foam. But I could. I had to put on a hair-bodied fly and you know, something that would sink if you did it wrong. It just was bothering me to do it. So.
Yeah, it is. We've not got that. I mean, we're on the lakes, we do. We have, like, the foam daddies and all that kind of stuff, a big deal.
And thing.
You know, like, we use boobies, but boobies are banned in a lot of places. Small lakes, you can't use them usually.
Really?
Yeah, they've like demonized it as a fly, but it's actually the way the angler's fishing it that's the issue.
What were they doing?
There was a trend for quite a while, a good number of years back, throwing it out on a fast sinking line, 2 foot leader, and waiting until the thing swam tight.
Yeah.
And then they've swallowed it down.
Yeah.
So it got banned in a lot of places, and it's still banned, but its best use is on the surface, like in a washing line or as an agitator.
That's all I've ever done, is wash line them.
Yeah.
I mean, forever. But I do them on sinking lines. I mean, I do both, but I've never just used it to, you know, because that's kind of the ultimate of fishing zones. You know, like you grew up in a river learning your emergences and your pupations, and then you, and it's the same thing in the lake, you know, letting it drop and letting that everything. But we can't run, I think we have a two fly law or something. Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's two.
I occasionally forget there's another
one. Wyoming's three in a lot of places.
It's the dumbest guy. It's the stupidest rule on the planet. It's not like we're running trout lines. We let every fish go, right? So who gives a shit? It's not like we can over the
I
whole
think that's
thing
a little
started.
Government interference trying to help
well,
anglers
it started with
not
trout
tangle
lining
their...
and people catching fish for food.
Yeah,
and then you had to have a limit. And I'm just reading a book right now about it, about how they we were really ahead of the curve in Montana. We just didn't have anybody enforce it. But we got rid of a lot of multi-hook things before we got rid of fishing with explosives. So it was illegal to run a trot line, but you could still use dynamite. But again, we had one conservation officer for whatever 46 counties we've got or whatever. Right. And some of our
it's
counties
kind of a big
are
state.
Bigger than countries, you know. I mean, I'd love to see how big this Madison County is. It's hundreds of miles across this thing. And so, but I never understood it. And so, I like to, it's just to me, like it's fascinating way to fish.
Yeah.
It's not as productive. You know, on the lake, you watch here, other than the calabatus dries are on, you watch guys go out, boom, and they'll set up, you know, right on the breaks, fish the midges. 3 hours later, the boats are at the dock and they're all gone.
Yeah.
And there's not a soul fish in those things, period. And you get the whole lake to yourself. And if you see somebody, they're trolling.
Yeah.
And not flies, they're trolling gear out in the lake. And the fish are still there. And
yeah, 100%. I came here years ago and did the gulper thing and managed to persuade the guide to hang on after it had sort of finished and turn the boat sideways and get the wind. And I managed to like fashion together a highly illegal three fly cast. I didn't know it was illegal.
I don't either.
I stuck like three nymphs down the wind and like came tight, and I just managed to get it tight, and the whole thing just got ripped off the end completely.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah, it works.
I put some thicker string on and do it again and see what happened. And it was like, yeah, okay then.
Yeah.
But that was like 18 years ago.
That was unheard of.
And it's just frightening that it's not really, because you guys, your lake fisheries are just like, you know, incredible.
We have five lakes within very, very short order. I mean, Henry's would be the furthest. That's 17 miles, I think. And they are just, it's frightening.
Yeah.
It ruined me for a long time. I got old and everything's broke. So this is a hard river to get old on. I mean, wading in that son of a bitch with five knee surgeries later. I got a fake knee a couple of years ago, which helped immensely. But still, you're just borrowed time rocking them boulders.
Yeah.
You know, something's going to go down.
This river is greased bowling balls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially late season when it's really fun. And particularly when you get a lot of dry fly fish and it's just snot, you know.
Yeah.
It just gets so... It's strange.
I went swimming in it twice last year in September, and the wife went swimming in it as well at the same time.
Nice. So,
solidarity.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Fell in trying to get her out.
Hey, team. It's still, but the thing about this river, like most, you don't have to get over your knees ever in this river. We used to do it when I first moved here. We used to, Andy and I and a couple other guys, we'd put on, in the evening in particular, we would go down, get this little box of flies and shorts, and we just swam it. We'd go right to the middle. We'd get in at Reynolds, get fish the big pool, and go right down the middle. And your objective was to be able to take off running and hit the next boulder and get a hold of that son of a bitch. You know, and just, we would just, you'd be up to here in water sometimes. Not very many places you can get that deep, but it's not that deep, but it's hauling. And you just splat, you're like a bug on a rock, and you hold on to it, and it's like, shit, oh, you go around. And it was a nice night, you know, you're wet, but who cares, you know? And
just,
we'd catch this virgin water that nobody ever fished.
No.
which who cares? 10,000 of them on that shore you could catch anyway, but we just felt like we were doing something. We were trying to beat ourselves to death. And we did, but we just raced. You just take off running for a rock and then splat, get it, you know, ruin the run below it. Nobody was around though. I fished here, I would say, well, the first 10 years I was here, I wrote an article about it in Fly Fisherman once, and I never saw an angler after like 6:30 at night. Nobody. I mean, I don't give a shit if it was July 4th. Nobody. And July 4th is like, just blows up because Utah, Idaho, and all the states that kind of get close, Washington, Oregon, they piggyback their holiday, right? So 4th of July, if it's on a third, they can make it a really long vacation.
Trip. Yeah.
And so you can watch the, and it coincides with our salmon fly. That's always the peak or the beginning of the salmon flies up here. And so it was so busy, and you'd go out at 6:30, nobody, not a soul. And I wrote an article about, and I'm sure there were people that did, but nobody in as a whole, I would say 1% at best. And I heard, and that's why I wrote the article. Guys would come in the shop and say, "Well, how'd you do?" I said, "Crushed it last night." "You're so full of shit. You always fucking crush it." And I says, it's 100 fish up. I mean, just get 10%, you're really doing good, right?
Yeah.
It's a night thing, right? And I said it was the first, because growing up in Michigan, our hatches were pretty shitty. They really weren't good at all. I had very few really good hatches. And everything was evening. And you've basically fished spinners. The number one hatch there is the hex hatch, which is not a hatch. You only fish the spinner fall, as were most of the bugs we fished were spinners. And so I get here, and you get this day bugs, you know, you get a lot of caddis, and you get mostly caddis. And so I would go out in the evening, and there'd be all these EPR spinners, and I'd be like, "Holy shit, this is like heaven." And it's like 6 weeks long, right? And so I came back, and they would say, "What were you fishing?" And I said, "Rusty spinners." You'd be amazed how many times people said, "I thought this was flies only." I go, "Well, no, it's not." And what do you mean? They thought I was using a rusty MEP spinner.
Yeah.
And they were ignorant to the fact that there was something that wasn't a caddis or a dun.
Yeah.
And so I wrote this article about it, and how, because one of the, like in there, I've got a book called Cripples and Spinners, and it follows the opposite of an emergence. It follows the spinner fall and their drop through, because they don't just all float away, right? They get entrained in the water, but the thing about spinners is they come back to a specific type of water. They're not like a dun that hatches everywhere. They drop their eggs in specific styles of water on purpose. And so how they know that, I have no idea. And I would just ask, I would say, "Well, I was fishing a sunk spinner." And no clue,
nope.
None. I mean, that it's still, I think I've had the sunk spinner for 25 years or more, and it's still on the lake. We fish the shit out of them on the lake. But on the river, I would say between 70 and 80% of my caddis fish in the evening on sunk caddis.
Yeah.
And I run them that far from the dry, 6 inches, maybe 8 on a big night, right? And it's always the same, and yet to write an article that you heard it so much, and you'd say, "Well, it's just, I just fish it in the film," kind of like a, you know, spider.
Yeah.
And same thing, it's exactly the same thing as far as how you're doing it. And there was just this blank stare.
Yeah,
you know,
you'll get that at home. You get that back in England as well. I mean, so I used to fish a lot still do on the River Eden. I've got a place there, and a traditional method there is what they call fishing a bustard, which is like an owl-winged wet fly, like a big wet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an old traditional method, and I did it when I was young, but I didn't really know what I was doing. And it was Oliver, who I was at a show once, and Oliver was tying. And I was talking to him about it, and he went in his box and
for anybody who knows Oliver personally, will know, you know, what a groundbreaking moment this was, because he went in his fly box and like gave me two of his flies,
wow,
which like never happened. And so he gave me these two flies and he just said, tie them on, kiddo. Go out at night after dark, tie them on. And he gave me his popper caddis and his pupa. Mm. So one of the post overpositing adult and the pupa. He told me how to fish it, and that was like mind-blowing.
Wow.
That was mind-blowing. Because basically you're trying to do the same thing as you do with a bustard, but it's doing it properly.
Yeah.
It's fishing it right in the right sort of place. And that's still probably my favourite, some of my favourite summer fishing. But you could probably get 100 fly fishers. And other than the ones who have read Oliver's book and, you know, you're just talking a foreign language, you know.
There's only a handful of people that really, not anymore, there's a lot of people that are really immersed in it now, but since social media, which I personally, most people think it's the Antichrist, but it is the greatest learning thing that's ever happened. Yeah, and for our industry, it has a lot, like this room, fly tying, I told people I started my first shop in the 70s, and I told people all my life, fly tying material is the biggest waste of money. Don't put it in your shop. Absolute loss leader. And I would give them a formula. We always use fish right or fly right dubbing. So there's 24 colors. You're going to sell three deep. You're going to sell it 10 deep three times. Do the math. Your ROI on this is 3 years. In other words, you're out of business. It's a terrible investment. And then 2 years pre-COVID, 2 years pre-COVID, it started having this uptick. Fly tying did. And it was sticking. These people were actually sticking. And then COVID hit, and man, now fly tying is, and you got online, so it's, you know, shipping everywhere. That's the problem. You got a desk, you know, if you're in a business, you got X people walking in. That's why you only sell three colors deep.
Yeah.
I sell so much stuff to Scandinavia for, you know, salmon flies and steelhead flies, that all these colors that we would never think of stocking, right? And so, but it changed everything. The whole internet thing changed everything. I mean, that's what I told you. Full disclosure, I've known Howard for a while, but I didn't know I was subscribed to his channel. I've been watching this guy for a year and a half at least. And Howard comes in and I'm like, Howard. And it just doesn't register. It's the guy I'm watching on. I'm like a groupie. And I got three or four people that I just watch all the time, right? Most of it, I'm just trying to figure out what the hell you're saying. But sooner or later, I'm going to go, got it. You know, that was easy. And it's like, that's like Davey Watton. And I know Davey and I have been friends for, Jesus, I don't know, 25, maybe more years. And, you know, he moved here, and then he was in Chicago, but then he moved to Arkansas. Now imagine blending him, that Welshman's thing, with a Arkansas accent. I'd be like, what?
Huh?
I'm like looking at his mouth.
What'd you
speak
say?
Speak English.
That's it.
Oh. And he goes, it's proper English, you asshole.
Oh, okay, so Howard, what are some of the other either similarities or differences that sort of surprised you between either techniques or maybe the culture of fly fishing between the UK and the US?
I mean, we've not quite got the same level of fly fishing culture back home. There's just not as many of us, you know. Fly fishing's popular, but over here it's like, you know, in this
lifestyle
region,
here.
Yeah, it's a total lifestyle.
Yeah. It's on the commercials for their trucks. It's for
yeah.
They all know that it's a cool thing to do.
Yeah,
you hear it. Yeah,
and it's not the same. It's not the same at home, unfortunately. I think that's one of the big draws for us. You know, because a lot of my friends come over here, you know, once, twice a year. A good friend of mine, Peter Clark, always comes in here. This is like a holy grail for him. He's coming in here and just soaking it all up. You know, so we haven't got that.
It's so strange because I had that just the opposite. I just really, for some reason, have it that you guys, it is so serious that you might teach it in schools and church. And,
yeah, that was kind of my impression as well.
I've been offered to go over hundreds of times, and I just have never been able to put it together. And there's places that I want to go that I've seen in books, and I want to fish. I love chalk streams. And I thought I wanted to go to Ireland because I thought they were all chalk streams. And I was this guy that, there's this movie, The Quiet Man, John Wayne movie, and it's filmed on this place. I actually had the people that owned both ends of that where it was filmed, the property, and I forgot to get their numbers. They said, that's my property. I said, well, this guy I was in the other day says his. He goes, no, he's down below us. He goes, they filmed on our property. And then he says, and they're not chalk streams. And he says, and then he tells me why they're not a chalk stream. I says, I look like one. He goes, but they're not. And there's all this proper shit that goes on with you guys when you're talking, like, talking with Charles. I mean, I feel like I'm, first of all, I feel like I'm got a third grade at, well, fourth grade's not that bad, but I mean, and so, but I always thought it was just, you're blowing my mind here because I thought it was so ingrained in that I'm surprised to hear that the Euro thing's is big there. I just thought that that was so.
So there's a divide. There's a little bit of a divide. So when you go south, it's a lot of it's proper. When you go south, it's the chalk streams and there's upstream dry fly and still plenty of places have got like 1st of July as a rule before you can fish a nymph. You know, no indicators, all that kind of stuff. So there's that in the south. But I'm from the north, so I always I'll get grief for this, but the further north you go, the more real it gets. I think personally, it's you know we've got. The chalk streams are great, and some of them are wild, and they've got wild fish, but some of them are still supplemented. Up in the north, we tend not to stock fish very often, and it's probably a little bit more like here. You know, and that's, I don't know, that's probably why I like it here so much, because our fisheries in the north remind me of this. You know, it's.
I don't remember when we stopped stocking. I think it was in 77, but I'm not positive about that. I'll have to look it up. And there were this river was stocked the hell out of it.
You're talking about Montana or
Montana as a whole stopped stocking rivers. They still I just fidgeted out.
I've got massive feet, it's not helping.
Yeah, I was wondering what the hell those things were. Jesus, I'm all like, what, 17?
All duttoned up in my size 13s.
Now you guys are pretending like you haven't been playing footsies the whole time.
Yeah, you know.
Well, I thought it was you, so I was just used to it. But, yeah, I didn't I thought it was I knew you guys stocked a lot, but I didn't know. And we still stock lakes here, and there's some migration. I don't think they do quake, but it's potential for migration out of the lakes. But,
yeah.
But the I don't know. I just have this idea that it's you know the kind of the mothership. It's where it all started. And,
well, it is.
And you start, and I always thought that everything was like. Proper and
it is. I mean, I won't say we. I shouldn't maybe say we've not got any fly culture because we have, but it's not on the same scale as it is here. You know, you've got really cool pockets of really you know relevant stuff to the history of fly fishing. You know, go down to Stockbridge and you've got all that kind of chalk stream stuff going on down there and on the lakes, Blagdon, which is a you know home of sort of still water fly fishing to some degree in the in England anyway. And Loch Leven, that's another cool place up in Scotland. So you have got all those sort of pockets of culture, but it's not like it's always on a scale here. You know, when you come and it's like drift boat after drift boat in a car park, everybody walking around in the waders. You know, if I walk into the supermarket at home, which is, you know, I've got a house about 50 metres from the river now, and if I walk into the grocery store in my waders, I get looked at like I've come out of a UFO, you know. Whereas here, I can you can stand at the bar and I'm.
You could be at a bar here.
No, because
did you did you fly into Bozeman?
Yes.
I mean, you get into the Bozeman Airport and everything is fly fishing.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, there's one ad for Big Sky, one for a rug company, and everything else is all the fly shops.
And that's become, like you said, pervasive in our in the U.S. Rather you do it or not. It's a metaphor for being outdoors because it's looked at as a higher form of fishing, which is total bullshit. It's not, but it's fishing. But I mean, you look at, we talked about this on a podcast where I just went, we always do this thing about, not always this thing, what's pissing you off today? And it, when it was this, the advertisement and the fact that they don't, they know fly fishing's part of or culture, because anywhere, I mean, it doesn't matter. You'll the biggest fly fishing club in the U.S. is in Dallas, Texas. There's one river that has trout in it, you know, the Guadalupe, and it's like, shit, there's not water, right? And, but yet, they all come here, right? And so it's worldwide, and then were always bitching that they have these commercials where the guy's got the fly rod upside down, or, you know, he's casting a spinner on his fly rod. It's just like, ow, you know, it's there. Why don't you take the time?
It's like,
it is like everybody now, but that's new. That's, you know, it's, that's, well, since The River Runs Through It, since that movie came out. Did that do that hit you guys and make it stupid?
Yeah, didn't really. It had an effect, I think, but it didn't have a big effect.
Ours had a huge effect for about 18 months, and it was over.
Yeah.
And everyone that started quit. And then they just kind of slowly filtered into it. It's just, it's not, it's strange that it's not, I figured it was the same or worse there.
I mean, I'll give you an example. So my local rivers are like freestoners, wild trout, some big wild trout as well. Not huge, not quite the same volume of big fish as over here, but it's good fishing. Usually the best months are like June in the evening. I can still go out on the waters that I fish, which are pretty easily accessible. And after June, you'll be lucky if I see another angler in the river.
Wow.
You can have
different
miles of water to yourself.
You
miles
can do that here from 8 o'clock till dark.
Yeah.
It's a.
Or the 5 good news a.m. is to 7 a.m.
Yeah, the early and the late. You know, this is a float river a lot. And then as soon as you get away from the big bugs, so it's pretty much, you can, if you go in the evenings, if you fish proper, you know, fish a dry fly, go out and it's so good. But you might see somebody, but they don't want to see you either. So they just like. And how much water do you need? You're fishing dries, right? You don't have to be marching up the freaking river. So I fish almost every night in the summer. And, you know, I might see, but I'm at my property here, but there's still access through it. And I might see a person or two, but that's pretty rare.
Yeah.
Usually they're on the way out, you know, as I get there. And so.
It's always the people.
And they're afraid of bears, too.
Yeah.
That's the beauty. Everybody thinks there's a bear behind every bush.
Yeah, I might
and
be
I encourage
that
them
sometimes.
To think that. I like them to say that. These morons, shit, they fish all night. They're wading around up in the heaviest bear country there is.
It's spooky shit.
you enjoy that. You won't see me up there.
No, I get the hair on the back of my neck standing up big time when I'm up there in the dark.
I didn't even know that Between the Lakes was bad for them because I fish Between the Lakes a lot.
It's great.
And I always used to think, there's lots of people here. Loads of cars around, it'll be fine. There's no bears.
Bears will tolerate lots of people, will tolerate lots of people.
Yeah.
You know, it's just.
So thanks for spoiling that for
me. It is so rare. I've seen more bears in the daytime, in the middle of the summer, July, like middle of July, big bugs and bears swimming across the river. It's like, it'll pucker your ass up, but I mean, they're not.
I think I might have told this on the podcast, but I had, I'd been up there at night and had like, encounters with what I know were bears later, like they were on carcasses and stuff. But never had a close run in at night. And then we filmed a morning show and then we were going to film an evening show. And I went up there to just throw hoppers for a little while. And I see this guide running, waving at me, pointing to the middle of the river. So I think it's his dog swimming down the rapids. So I wade out there. It looked like a little border collie, and it was a black bear. So I turned around and hopped my ass back to the bank pretty quick. But, I mean, it's a really berry area. And people see him. But,
who's that guy in my bathroom?
You know, what? Your mic's still on, right?
Yeah, I know. It makes for entertaining.
Yeah.
He's Scottish.
You can bleep it out. You're good at that. Where were we before I left you?
I can't remember either.
We were probably talking about fishing.
Wow, that's unique.
Nor is it done.
Okay, so I want to back up to, I kind of asked you about the one fly versus two fly thing. When you are contact nymphing in competition, how often are you doing one fly?
I go to one fly as soon as I can.
Okay.
Just for improvements in drift and contact and control.
The other question I had is, I'm not super familiar with competition angling. I almost fell out of my stool there. Is there anything to be said for having one fly when you do land a fish, not absolute rat-f***ing your rig?
A little bit. Yeah.
The time aspect of having to retie and untangle.
Yeah. It's, I try and always go to one as soon as I can because I perceive it gives myself a bit of an advantage sometimes. I mean, wrong, sometimes two flies is better. But, yeah, various reasons I'll often go to one fly. But it's not all nymphing. You know, a lot of times we're doing a lot of other stuff. Dries, a lot of the time now, is becoming increasingly important.
I did a little rant about this one time about it, and I just said that in competition, right? And people writing in, you don't know sweet fuck all about that. And I remember, and I said, I would just like to see it where it's like one day's nymph, one day's dry, one day's all, every aspect is just one is one. And the guy said, we carry all the rods. And I was watching you, and like, fuck, he's got like five rods in there.
You caught me with that one. you caught me like a stalker with that one.
Yeah.
That was, yeah, I bit on that one.
Did you get me good?
I did, yeah.
Straight on. Stupid fuck, you don't know shit.
I was straight on a bit. I was commenting. I was like,
I was just talking. I was just like.
And then I realised I had a blob down the back of my throat, and I'd been hung out to dry. I was dead in the bottom of the boat.
It was. I don't have a problem. I just wish we had. I don't like the rule changes. Like when it was twice the leader length, and then the rods go to way long and everything, but that's how life is. You're learning. Your competition's about cheating. Just push it a little bit further until, like right now in the U.S., the bass fishing, forward imagery.
Yeah.
Completely changed the way that people fish. I mean, just watched it there. We talk about it on this a lot because I'm a total bass junkie. And the kid that just won the Classic, the guy said he'd never win it if he doesn't power fish. He just kicked ass. He broke every record there was. 23 or 1 years old or some shit. 3 weeks later at the Elite, half the people, because they don't even cast, right?
Okay.
You don't cast. You just look at your monitor. Because if you're just power fishing, you get a fish and it's a pound, and you wait and that fish pushes off maybe your fish, and then all of a sudden you see a 4-pounder, and then you just, this is how you watch these kids fish. And then they stare intently once they see that fish on to see if there's a bigger fish with it. And I was like, I think that sucks too, but you know, it's competition. And then there's a lot of the guys who want to ban forward imagery, right? And so I was just ranting and raving about, it was more bait for to get guys like, and all the guys.
Oh, you got me.
Yeah, all the guys are like pissed off at me, and I'm like, fuck, I do it too. I go do it, I didn't say that. It's kind of like the $1,000 rod thing. I never said there's anything wrong with a $1,000 rod. I said there's a lot of great kit rods.
Yeah.
You know, guys on his first day fishing probably doesn't need his $1,000 stick, right? But who cares? I had them. I still do. Got lots of them. But that was more about, I would like to see, I just wish it would go back to real rules, like 10-foot leaders and have to have a fly line and no mono. I mean, we were doing that competition stuff in the Great Lakes. We were doing that competition line in the 80s.
Yeah.
And it was tight line and with lead, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't even close to what we're doing. We were doing swivel setups, right? We got these slinkies on there. We got lead. And it was so we could pretend we were fly fishing.
Yeah.
And Bruce Richards made, and Ray Schmidt made these 023, 027, and 033 lines. And we would hook, God, I can't remember now, 8 foot a leader. And then you'd have a swivel, and some guys would run a slinky above it, or you just do a drop with lead, and then you have another swivel with a dropper fly and another fly down here. And so and with 3 number 7 split shot, for Christ's sake, I could throw across, I could bet you from right here seated, I could hit the river with that. And you'd strip this competition line out. And it was like, well, you could either use amnesia or gold strand, or you could use these lines, right? And it was all just trying to legitimatize what we were doing. And that kind of, and now, I mean, we had a generation of anglers that just don't. I have guys that fish slinkies here.
Yeah.
Well, that are just like with mono straight through.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of getting at, I mean, it's, like I said, I do it. And I actually love to go do it. I just wouldn't mind doing it all the time.
No, that's the thing, you don't. I mean, the rules are put in place by the organization to keep it fly fishing, you know. And
Kind of,
yeah. You try the best.
I always found it was funny that, because when I was reading Oliver's, I felt it was even more emboldened then because Oliver's pissed off and Oliver's talking about beatheads. Well, that's brass.
Space helmets.
Space helmets. But I thought it was pretty funny that you don't allow lead in competition, but you allow something heavier.
Yeah.
So, okay. And that was all I was getting at. It's like, I don't know, we could have a Euro day, and you could have a dry-only day, and you could have a nymph-only day.
Yeah.
And you could have a wet day, and you could have a streamer day, and you could have a whatever day, you know. They still don't let it in the lake. You can't run a bobber, can you?
No, they've put a lot of new rules in recently to like, push that away.
Yeah.
You can do something similar, but you can't use foam, and you can't use trapping materials or anything hard-bodied or...
I said it was a fun rant for me. I'm sorry I missed it. I probably read it. I just don't look.
I just found it.
The name thing.
I read it.
You know, you don't.
I was trying to figure out if you were on a burner account or not.
No,
if
you're, I was so disappointed.
I love
devastated.
Here you go.
So
here it comes. Here it comes, Howard. Bite that. I got so many haters out of that one that. I'm thinking, Jesus, I said I like it. I do it.
Yeah, that's called clickbait. We try not to do it that often.
I didn't really
it
know
works really
clickbait.
Well.
I was just ranting as usual. God, we should do this with three beers.
So, Howard, what changes would you want to see in the competition world? What gripes do you have with it right now?
I don't know if I have any real gripes with it, I don't think. I think, if anything, I mean, there's a massive home advantage. And
massive what?
Massive home advantage.
Oh.
Where it's in a country, what tends to happen, it happened in France just the other year. The French shut down all similar rivers along the same time as the competition rivers. So we've got to turn up blind. And I think the one good thing about competition fishing is, or not the one good thing, but one of the many, is good competition anglers get a good skill for turning up at somewhere they've never been before. And like putting all the bits together quite quickly, because a lot of the time we're not allowed to pre-fish or pre-practice. So you've just got to go cold effectively. You know, so I think they could probably do something to even it out a little bit, you know, because a lot of these countries don't need a home advantage. The French don't need one. You know, it was a complete clean sweep. They won it as a team, and they won all the individual medals as well.
Yeah.
You know, and they were always going to, but they still shut everything down for 3 months before we got there. You know, and then pushed us out to like higher altitude rivers or lower altitude rivers with no trout in them, and just like, you know, just to make sure. So I don't like that little bit of it. But.
To be clear, I'm a big fan. I have said this forever, and I used to really, really love the World Show, you know, the World Competition. And I actually got in a really big pissing match with a guy. He was an editor, associate editor. We did a podcast where we were talking about it, and I told him how much I liked competition, and he just jumped down my throat. He says, competition brings the best of the best to the top, and it disseminates to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
If we just kept, in the old days, you kept everything yourself. Back in the 70s and 80s even, you know, you had your flies, and you didn't tell them, and you fished your way, and it's still that way to a great extent with guiding. But if you're in the guide's boat, you get to do that. But in where I grew up, so much of the dry fly fishing was like, well, you go with, you know, you're going to go here, you go with Walt Grau. This is his river. You know, this is where, and he's got his flies. And he did, and he kept everything secret. Which was, but then you're going to start competing, just like with bass. I mean, it's one of the biggest industries in the world now, right? It wasn't always that way. And it dissimulates because it, you know, you write an article about, you know, it's always been that way. And the best, you know, as competition tarpon fishing came on, you got people who became, because they'd say, how'd you win, Andy? You know, well, I was using this, right? And they teach you. And we got in this, we were in Marlow's. Boy, were we hammered. I mean, God, it was ugly. And so we're in Marlow's in Denver. And I just said, you know, I think it's the best thing for her. I said, it'll help everybody. And people, and we need heroes. You need heroes. You need the Howards of the world. So you can say, oh, I really like that guy. Or and you need the villain, too. So, you know, screw Howard. I don't like that guy. He's an asshole. He doesn't like this or that. Or Gallup's so full of shit. Doesn't matter. but it gives, with the villain, there's always a hero. And then there's always somewhere in between, right? But the one thing that never ends is everybody gets better for it.
100%, yeah.
I mean, everybody. It doesn't matter if you're running, skiing, bicycle, tennis. Everybody gets better from that. And especially now with our social media. And that was the little bit of bait. That was a little bit of the bait click because I have, and by the way, I got in this piss match with this guy and we ended up writing an article. The editor of the magazine asked me and Hurok and, oh shit, who else? There's three of us in it, I think, or four, to write our, you know, the future of fly fishing thing. Yeah. Because I was so pro, and the other guy is a young kid, and he was just like anti everything. What do you want to turn into bass fishing? I said, I'd love to have their conservation dollars. Yeah. I would love to see that in our industry. I mean, some people want to keep it to themselves, and they don't want and anybody like me, I've had people tell me, you're such a self-promoter. And I said, well, who's promoting for you, asshole? I'm self-employed. I'm promoting and I'm helping hundreds of thousands of people. Is that evil? Is that bad? There's so many goddamn people on the river now. I says, oh, I'm sure it's all me. Mm. And I ruined fly fishing. I said, well, Howard was first.
I was, yeah. Well,
and it's just like, competition's great. I was just kind of picking the bull's butt a little bit. How do you like that?
Yeah, you got us with that one.
And I think Davey was the one that got me on it about Watton, was that when the rules were changing, way back when, is when he worked for TFO, and they were going to 13 and 14 foot rods.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm thinking, and it's because you could have twice the leader length.
Yeah,
they changed
double
it
rod
to
length.
Twice, was it? Is it?
You're allowed double rod length to a
double.
Maximum of like,
right,
22 feet or 24 feet.
And I said, well, that's a good spinning rod cast, you know? And I mean, we'll figure a way to just run it just like a spinning rod.
Yeah.
And I said, that's just what we're doing, which is fine. And it'll probably go back at some point to, we're always trying, we like to push it, cheat, get to a point, and then we bring it where it levels it out. I mean, I have guys here that are telling me, they're running 24-foot dry fly leaders. I said, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. That thing's getting sucked underwater. I says, I don't know the last time I threw 25 feet to a trout on this river.
No, it's not good for on here.
No, it's not.
Good
for on here. I mean, shit, most of my fish are from here to that door.
Yeah, like, this sets up perfect for that. I mean, those big leaders have been they're not new, but like Spanish guys have really pioneered and pushed that folded leader fly first presentation for flat water fish, and that's a game changer.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, because you always get a perfect left or right hook and a drag free drift.
Yep.
And you get massive drifts. But on here, it's worthless.
Oh, well, they're talking dries too. That on here, I said, oh, shit, they'll suck your leader down so quick. So many convergent seams and vacuums on this thing. It's crazy. But up on the Mo, maybe we'll always fish long leaders. I never fished a 20-footer, but we fished a lot of 18s.
So it works well up there. Yeah, fish that a bit up there. But it's just the wind. You've got to deal with the wind.
Yeah.
And that takes some dealing with a 20-foot leader.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of guys liked it like that, too. But they were using them for dry flies. And
that's what we do usually with Spanish stuff. It's a Spanish dry fly leader, typically. And we all pretty much fish level mono for the nymphrigs. Thin level mono a lot of the time. Right. Just to get contact. But I think a lot of people, when they said to me about, you know, the competition thing, I'll often say, at the end of the day, you've got 135 people with a common interest going away doing fishing for 2 weeks and drinking beer and talking about it. So it's pretty hard not to have a good time when you're there.
Well, that's the whole point.
Outside the competition
thing. Well, as I said, we need heroes. You need heroes in everything. And hero's a dumb word, but I mean, just, you know, somebody.
Yeah, idols, something to hope for.
I mean,
for.
How many idols do you have? I mean, Joe Brooks for me and Al Linder and guys like that, a lot of the old bass guys. And the only reason so many people learn is because those guys were there. So you go off and, I mean, you may be I have never been anti-competition at all. I just like to, like you said, poke that bull for fun. But if I'm going to go somewhere, who do you think I'm going to go listen to? I'm going to go listen to you, right? I'm going to go listen to the guy that was winning at the show. And not some guy that's pissed off and doesn't share a thing. He's just pissed at somebody else's. There's a potential for one more person joining our sport or industry because well, what is that? I mean, it's,
yeah.
I mean, every sport in the world has had the same. I mean, we used to have a guy, Stein Erickson used to live here, skier. And we were all skiers, right? Everybody here, everybody that works here is a ski freak. In the old days, that's kind of how it happened. Guides became fly fishing guides in the West in particular when they figured out they could shovel water or they could hammer nails. Because all they gave a shit was getting that ski lifted. Get my ticket, you know, I'm going to pay rent, get a ski, I'll get my lift pass, and I can drink all winter. And that's all you care about, right? You know, so you can just ski.
Yeah.
And so they figured out how to do it, and that's as guiding was blowing up. But it doesn't matter, but Stein Erickson, this is back when he's an Austrian that won the gold, I think, or something. I can't remember. I think he was a gold medalist. I mean, he lived right here as a friend of mine. But, I mean, he was like this figure, and he was so good for skiing, right? He's a handsome, just bigger than life personality, a little guy, just bigger than life. I mean, just pushed skiing. And, you know, Jean-Claude Keeley and Billy the Kid and these guys that come along, and they're great for the sport. But in fishing, because we all want to own the freaking river, right? We don't want another person on the river. And unlike Richie, like I said in my video, I says, I don't care when people talk to me, because I tell them, you know who's going to end up talking? Me. And so it was just, but it's so good for our industry.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when it was small industry and it was no dollars and no conservation dollars. I mean, Trout Unlimited started right next to me. I know every one of those guys, and they're mostly all dead now, but I mean, they're the founders and all these guys, and we now have a voice, and you don't get a big voice with a couple people.
No.
You know, and if you want things to change, you need to have, I mean, just like planning or not planning, or, you know, I've never been a real fan of fly-only stuff. I don't really care for that, but, you know, live bait versus this or whatever, you know, against artificial. That's how you get those things.
Yeah.
When they always talk, everybody talks about bass like they're a bunch of bubbas. They have this giant, giant organization, hundreds of millions of dollars into this thing, right? They put more in one water project a year as a whole than we do as a country in fly fishing, right? And as that came along, what do you see? No bass guys kill fish.
No.
They're actually ahead of us on, they don't have any kill. And it's just frowned completely upon. Massive voice, right? Massive. Yeah. Oh, a bunch of bubbas. Yeah, a bunch of bubbas put $100,000 into your lake this year, personally, jackass. And so here it is, right? And the same with you. I mean, well, you go to shows and you speak and you see how many people show up to hear, and they're so thankful and they learn one thing.
Yeah.
That's competition, right? And we can't have competitions in Montana. You can't have a fly fishing competition.
No, I heard that. Yeah.
It's so crazy. Because we're going to, like, what? Help the economy? Jesus, that'd be terrible.
We'll find a way around.
We have.
All right, we are running out of time, so I think before we end, one, we should do Band of the Week, and then see if anybody has any closing comments. So, Band of the Week. This is interesting segment where you think of a band you like, and then you tell people to listen to it.
Boston,
okay.
Boston, Dual Leads.
I'm going Van Morrison.
Put me on the spot there.
I can think of many rock bands.
Yeah, me too. Who's the number one?
Yeah. Oh, man.
I was going to throw out, I'll give you a minute to think. I got to throw it. I mean, I'm not just a rock guy. I mean, Merle Haggard's got to show up. We got to have some influence here. My favorite memory, Merle Haggard, never heard it. You don't deserve to be alive. You understand what I'm saying?
Sounds like
key it up. Yeah, you could beat it.
Probably for me, I mean, I do a lot of Euro fishing, so probably like electronic trance music's probably what I should be listening to.
But you're not, right?
But I don't.
Good.
And we'll leave it at that.
All right, perfect.
How about you too? Isn't that over there?
Oh, good.
There you go.
I like a lot of stuff.
Me too. I'm like all over the place. I freaking love Adele.
Yeah.
I mean, you go from Ted Nugent to Adele. Phew.
Yeah.
Adele rips. Anybody who says
holy
otherwise,
shit, dude.
Adele rips.
When we were young, you listen to that thing. God, dang, that voice is unreal.
All right, any closing comments?
What am I pissed off about today?
Oh, yeah, what's Kelly pissed off about?
I'm still on that Facebook thing. But I have cleaned it up. By the way, anybody that's watching...
Did you hear what this Facebook thing is?
No. Oh, God.
So I'm going to explain algorithms to you real quick, Kelly.
Yes, I understand.
Kelly's angry that there's chicks with huge cans holding fish on his Facebook feed. And what an algorithm does is it tries to figure out what you like and then push more of that your way. So when you get upset about... For example, my dad, I marked one of our videos as, you know, it had bad language on it. When we go to monetize it on YouTube, you know, you have to kind of say what's in your video so they know which advertisers they can put on it. Well, we used a couple bad words, so I put that in there. So it, you know, the really clean advertisers didn't want to be on our videos. Well, my dad texts me saying, hey, just wanted to let you know there's boner pill companies advertising on your videos. I'm like, God, Christ.
Good for them.
Dad, algorithms. Yeah. Look them up.
I was getting fed. It drove me crazy because it was always the same thing. And they're always for some shop, right? And I don't really, I go on Facebook almost exclusively to look at English and traditional spay and D-flies.
Okay.
I mean, so... Or traditional wets, I mean, in particular. But I go in and I think it's important because not as like it used to be to go in and just see other people's stuff and like it and say, hey, I really like that fly, especially when it's an offshoot of one of mine or something, and say, yeah, I really dig it. That looks great. I wish I thought of that. It's good because we're all communicating, right? And there'd be these chicks, and it's like this chick and the cans and this fish and who gives a shit? It's not even near the water. And if you looked at it up above, brought to you by Bill and John's Bait Shop in Florida. Well, how'd they get on my thing, right? And it's just like one after another. I didn't know how to block all this stuff. I just thought, oh, God, it's just pissing. So now I figure out. So last weekend, I had my son here. He's autistic, and he's not verbal, and he just does a lot of video watching, right? So I got a lot of time to sit around and do nothing. So I went through and I just started blocking. And by the way, I block a lot of my really good friends. All this political shit, I don't want to see that shit on there either. I want to see my flies and my buddy that's got a good fish, right? It's like, oh, I actually caught it and I don't have big tits. And so it's like...
Some of your buddies
such
do.
A click. Some of my buddies do, yeah. They're right. They haven't got there yet. But so I went in and I cleaned it. And I just to see, and I block. Some really good friends, because they're all this political shit. I'm not going to change my mind because you're dumbass. This, you know, you're an idiot. You should believe me. So I went through, and this morning I got up, like 20 in a row, nothing but really great flies. I mean, really good flies, a couple of fish, one or two guys got through it. So I'm not as pissed as now that I figured out how to block their asses forever.
Well, it's
and particularly on one of our neighbor. And I blocked his ass.
It's a nice full circle story. Really round out that podcast. So
that was
Howard,
fun.
Thanks
that
so
was
much
a,
for joining us. That was
awesome. That was a blast, guys.
And we're going to go film some fishing stuff. That'll probably come out later than this podcast does. But stay tuned. It'll be a lot of fun.
Thanks for watching. Hope you enjoyed it.